This episode sponsored by We Feed Raw. Have you ever actually looked at the label on your dog's food? Most dog food labels are a long list of things that don't look like food. Powders, starches, additives used to hold ultra-processed kibble together. At We Feed Raw, the label looks very different. High-quality meat, nutrient-rich organs, complete and balanced nutrition formulated by PhD nutrition experts. No fillers, no artificial preservatives, just real ingredients that support your dog's whole body health. That's why many pet parents see real changes after switching to We Feed Raw's fresh meals. If you want to feed your dog one of the healthiest diets possible, We Feed Raw makes it simple. Right now, new customers can get 40% off their starter box plus free shipping. Visit We Feed Raw at wefeedraw.com to get started today.
If you enjoy this podcast, would you mind leaving us a review? This is how others find our podcast. Welcome back to Feeding the Mouth That Bites You, a weekly podcast guide on parenting teens and launching them into the world. I'm Jessica Pfeiffer, and as always, I'm joined by psychologist and author, Dr. Ken Wilgus. Hey, Dr. Ken.
Jessica.
I have a funny story for you.
Oh, boy.
So last night, we were eating dinner, and I had made a new recipe, and my 17-year-old looked at me, and she said, "This is munch."
Munch.
And I looked and I said, "What is munch?" And she goes, "You know, munch." And I said, "You mean like bus or bussin? This is bussin?" And she's like, "Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of the same thing. It's munch." And I said, "This is not making any sense. And the fact that I'm using your words to define your new words is the weirdest situation."
When do parents start being the bus chaser or the word chaser, trying to keep up with our teenagers, who are clearly making stuff up just to be the in group and we're out? I bet she didn't like that you even knew what bussing was.
I know. Well, we kind of laughed. And then my husband was like, "You know, munch is like, it's a verb. This is not a noun."
He's a very concrete man.
I don't know what we're doing with this word in this place, in the sentence.
He doesn't play along at all.
But I took the compliment. That was the main thing I took away, was she complimented me for my food, and I don't care how it comes.
That's exactly right. We'll take it.
Take it with appreciation.
Even if you can't understand what they're saying.
Yes. So, well, let's talk about something interesting today that you had brought up to me that I didn't really know about.
Right.
So I wanted to discuss a little more. Let's talk about mentalization.
Which sounds like
I want you to define this.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a trick, you know, like, come see our mentalization guy and he'll no. So I think about it a lot because a lot of people don't know about it, but it'll make sense. Mentalization is essentially the ability to understand the mental state that underlies behavior, like knowing what you're thinking and feeling and why you did this thing. And more importantly, knowing what other people are thinking and feeling and why they did this thing. And so if you've ever heard, you probably never heard also of theory of mind. You probably hadn't heard of that either. That's a big philosophy thing. Mentalization is a subcategory of that, but it's something that comes up a lot in therapy. And I think it might be helpful for parents to think about is your kid, teenager we talk about, but is your kid of any age good at knowing the motivations and the thoughts of other people? And so in my family, for example, one of our favorite stories is our good friend's daughter. When she was the first kid that we ever knew, it was before we had kids. She was, I think, two. And she wanted to give her dad a Christmas gift. So she wrapped up the gift herself. Her mom said, "Well, what do you think Daddy wants?" And so she pulled out one of her baby bottles, wrapped it up, and gave it to her dad for Christmas. Because as you can guess, a two-year-old isn't really good at knowing what do you think other people want for a gift. I know that, you know, I was way older than that when my brother and I got this big bottle of perfume for my mom, because you know it was good because of how big the bottle was. Mentalization is your ability to kind of get in other people's heads. And to do that, you have to kind of know your own thoughts and feelings, but not primarily just so you're really knowing yourself great. There's a lot of focus on that. You know, do you know yourself well? you have to know yourself well enough to at least know what is in it. I think a dwindling capacity in our culture, which is, are you good at guessing other people's motivations, their feelings, what their needs are?
Okay, so is this the same as emotional IQ? Because you hear a lot about that.
Yeah, you do. And emotional IQ would, I think, would be a subcategory of this. But my concern, so emotional IQ is basically knowing your own thoughts and feelings and being able to communicate that well. Comes up a lot in marriage therapy, you know, that a lot of men aren't great at saying, well, honey, I'm feeling a little bit confused right now and having some feeling, you know, it's not typically a male thing. Girls are way better at that than boys are. So it can be helpful, you know, to know your own thoughts and feelings and be able to articulate them. But as you might guess, in the culture we're in now, especially the parenting styles that are popular now, I really don't want to emphasize more focus on how your teenager is thinking or feeling or how your child is. I think emotional IQ would be helpful in being able to do the important thing, which is knowing what other people are thinking and feeling.
So what is it that concerns you about this with our teenagers today?
Well, it's kind of a big thing that I'm getting at, but you know, I see it everywhere. I feel like once you think about it in that way, you see it everywhere. So for example, social media, a lot of kids do a lot of interacting, or at least they feel like they're being social through a computer, through an app, through even texting. Well, the amount of social information that is absorbed or given over in social media is way reduced from when you're sitting with somebody. You know, even when you're video chatting with somebody, it is not the same as really being able to take in all the information that is available when you are in live presence of other people. Mm-hmm. And so I think in a general sense, especially since the pandemic, there's been a reduction in people's ability to really read other people. And I think social media plays into that. I'm concerned about the rise in video therapy that it's not even video therapy. There's a kind of coaching now that is apparently done with just texting, you know, like just ask someone. It's not that you can't do anything with that. You know, I think if you're needing to know how do I get to this place, it's fine if someone texting you, take a left here and a right there. But if you're asking, what do I do with this romantic relationship that I'm in and so forth, texting back and forth is missing really two thirds of that information. So if anything, I think mentalization is something I want to think about more because it's not being thought about. You know, people are just not valuing, I think, and parents aren't valuing, does my kid know how to read other people and how to really think about what they need and what is good for them? Parents will even try to be good parents by, you know, suggesting that, you know, these friends, if they're not helping you, then you need to just get new friends, you know, sort of like your child is the lead role in a sitcom. And, you know, this is season three and we've replaced all the other actors in your life. It's not helpful. It's not emotionally helpful. Virtually all of us have very little contact with extended family, which is also how you learn other people's needs and emotions and so forth. So I think it's something that I'd really want parents to think a lot about in what they can do to encourage in their own lives and in the lives of their children, and especially teenagers, the regular, I guess, focus on, well, why do you think he did that? What do you think she was needing when she was saying that? Is this person, do you think they're a very happy person? Things that really try to, I guess, stimulate the ability of your children and teenagers to know another person.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was thinking about this college class I took. It was on communication, and they were talking about how half of communication is reading body language.
That's right.
Knowing how people are responding. And when you're right, when you're over a screen or when you're, you know, texting with somebody, certainly you're not reading tone into that. You can misread tone that way,
yep.
You know, by thinking someone's emphasizing one word over another, or, you know, you don't catch that little glance off to the side or that confused look, you know, or even people in front of a screen, they monitor a little more because they can see themselves,
That's
what they're
exactly
doing,
right.
you
Yeah.
know?
Ever watch somebody? Well, of course you have. You're talking to someone and they glance at their message that popped up on their phone or their little smartwatch. Mm-hmm. And then they react just a little different, but you don't know what they just read. You don't know what, you know, it changes subtle things all the time. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we're thinking enough about it. There's a new book by David Brooks. He's a New York Times writer, and he's written several books. He's a converted to Christianity about 10 years ago. But he wrote a book called How to Know a Person that I think is a really interesting dive. And it's a deep dive into the importance and ways of thinking about how can you know others and be known by others. I just think it's interesting. It's selling very well. It's a very popular book. And you got to ask yourself, what kind of culture is moved to read a lot about how to know each other? Well, it's a culture that is coming apart. We don't really know how to be known and how to read other people. I think we're becoming more and more ignorant of it.
Isn't that actually just what makes us human, is being able to be known and, you know, be intimate with other people? I mean, of course, you know, you hear a lot about AI and all that, but I'm thinking right now, is it because, you know, our younger generations are dehumanizing or kind of putting people at a distance as if they don't have real feelings, as if they don't have a life or something outside of that very moment that they're experiencing them?
I think it's a good way to put it. It's like a cultural attention deficit problem. You know, one of the harder things when you deal with teenagers with ADD, and we've said on this before, you know, when you have attention problems, depression will do much the same thing if it's significant. You really misread social cues. You don't read what's going on very well. Mm-hmm. And if you think about that on a cultural level, what gets worse is that if you've been misreading people for a long time, sometimes angry teenagers will start to fall prey to these kind of global theories. Like when an ADD girl tells me that, well, you know, girls are mean. I don't hang with girls. And I'm like, you are one. She's like, yeah, but they're mean. What she's saying is that she has been failed at girl relationships, which can be catty, yes, but it also requires real awareness, social awareness. And she's kind of come up with this global theory that's wrong to sort of make up for what she doesn't know, which is you're not reading them very well. And I think culturally, we're kind of getting into that. You know, people are arguing that you really shouldn't judge anything about me just by seeing me. You may think I'm male, but maybe I'm not a male. Maybe I'm, you know, different gender than what I look like. My race shouldn't say anything about thing, which we mostly agree with, but it does get down to, well, then are you actually looking for a kind of community where every human comes across each other human with complete blank, no expectations, no knowledge, nothing? That seems like a currently sort of a goal. Like that would be great. That wouldn't be great at all in trying to avoid negative prejudices, which I think we worked hard at correcting. The correction isn't that therefore you really don't make any assumptions about anyone. That makes you socially ignorant. I worry that it makes us basically take on the priority of leave each other alone, have nothing to do with each other. Don't, you know, care for someone because you don't know what they're going through. Well, you should try to know what they're going through. You should be, it's good for our kids to be good at knowing what another person is thinking and feeling and what their struggles are.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a parent, so what would be some concerning signs that you would say, you know, if you have a teenager that's doing these things, these are concerning to signs. And then how do we intervene and help our kids? I know you gave a few suggestions.
Well, I think that, you know, particularly with teenagers, it's easier to think about what to do with children. For example, I used to do group therapy with a bunch of boys. And one of the activities would do is the one boy would go out of the room and we would tell him an emotion word, you know, you are sad. And then he would come in and do that face or act that out. And the other boys would try to guess what he's feeling, which is a kind of thing you do. Most of these kids were either severely ADD, maybe even moderately autistic. There was just this, you know, it was like a method of kind of being good at that. So I think mm-hmm. one of the things for parents to think about is this a struggle that your child is having? And, you know, if it's a child, you can probably use normal ways of trying to encourage, teach, correct, that kind of thing. With a teenager, as any parent knows, that's going to be a lot harder. And that's going to start mm-hmm. with what Feeding the Mouth always talks about, which is you want to reduce any control battle. So that would mean, you know, this would be definitely something that you'd start in the advice giving category. That's in the book, Advice Giving. I think we've done a couple episodes on that, where mm-hmm. you start by saying, hey, you know, your friendships are your deal. It's not my deal. But can we talk about yesterday when you said you were mad? Because to me, and then just try to carefully and with respect, try to talk about where your teenager may be misreading stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're old enough, you might even direct them toward the term mentalization. Teenagers love to look everything up and feel like they know, they're expert on it because they watched half of a YouTube video on it. But, you know, but you could talk to them about, I'm concerned that, you know, this is the second time now that you got mad at this guy and he told you that's not what he meant. And, you know, and try to respectfully direct them toward the awareness of and improvement of mentalization. There's some evidence in therapy that you can improve that ability by teaching certainly adults to think about that and to step back and reconsider their, you know, preconceptions and basically misreading of what everyone's thinking and feeling.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes we have kids who are just kind of oblivious to others' feelings. And then we have kids who may be, especially anxious kids, who may be so preoccupied and concerned with what everyone else yeah. is thinking and feeling. You know, what do we do about those kids that almost misread things because they're worried about how it's affecting?
Well, that's exactly what it is. You know, if someone will say, I'm socially anxious, and part of my social anxiety is that I'm very focused on how other people are thinking about me. But if you spend time talking with someone with severe social anxiety, and you get older and you'll know it, that they're actually not focusing on what others are thinking. They're focusing on what they think others are thinking. And that's a whole, you know, I think that's been written about rather a lot, what mm-hmm. you think others are thinking. And an anxious person, especially anxious children and teenagers, are misreading what others are thinking. They're really misreading what other people are thinking. And one of the things that can be helpful with a kind of over self-conscious anxiety is when young people get old enough to recognize, you know, I don't think they're thinking about you as much as you think they are. Mm-hmm. That's an old phrase. What is it? In your 20s, you worry about what everyone's thinking about you. In your 40s, you don't care what everyone's thinking about you. In your 60s, you realize no one was even thinking about you. So it's yeah. it's all about that kind of mentalization. You know, what do I think other people are thinking? And so that's a good question. Aren't anxious people focusing too much on what others are thinking? Actually, no, they're focusing on a misread of what other people are thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, the most common treatment, by the way, if we're going to talk about that, is with anxiety, is for young people to learn to tell other people that they're anxious. I do that a lot, because when you're an anxious person, especially an attractive anxious person, nobody thinks you're anxious. They think mm-hmm. you're stuck up. They think you're, you know, ignoring them. People misread you because you never say I'm anxious, and you don't realize that you're pretty good at covering it up. That's mm-hmm. also a subcategory of mentalizing.
It's interesting. Well, both of them, both the kid who is maybe oblivious to other people's emotions, and then the one who's highly concerned with other people's emotions or what they're putting off. They're both wrong, right? That's really yeah. the bottom line, is they're both yeah, off.
That's a good point.
And they both misread the situation. And that's where, as parents with a little more experience, we can come in and say, yeah, I don't think that they were all laughing at you. I think that you must have misread that situation a bit.
Exactly. Exactly. You know?
So what is our takeaway on you know, this topic of mentalization with our teenagers? How do we apply this to our daily life?
I think we start, the takeaway is, number one, I recognize that this topic may not be very helpful to some people, and I'm sorry, I just find it fascinating. Mm-hmm. But number two, I think there are probably some parents that are really lit up on this, like, yes, I see this. I see the problem that my children, or especially my teenagers, are having in reading other people. And I would really encourage all families to really to be talking about this, because I think we're living in a culture that is disintegrating a bit, in part, among other things, because we don't know how to know each other. Mm-hmm. And how to really think about what other people are needing and feeling. We only think about what we're needing and feeling. And ironically, we're not even doing well at that. We're giving ourselves very bad categories. You know, when someone is very uncomfortable in their body and so forth, to give a real flat category of, well, maybe you are gender diverse, that's not even helpful. It's just a terrible way of trying to generalize what even you're going through. So we don't know ourselves well, and we certainly are getting worse at knowing each other. So I think it's something to think about in your own teenagers, and maybe to talk more about. If you're so interested, you might look at David Brooks' book, How to Know a Person, and that might give you more direction in how you want to bring this topic to your household. Because like I say, it is becoming less and less known in our entire culture, and even worse in the church. And I think it's really important that this is how we know each other. And it's a valuable skill that is deteriorating before our eyes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, I mean, this is what makes us human, right?
It's being, good
having
way to put
emotions,
it.
Having emotions, being able to be intimate with other people. And if we can't understand well what other people are thinking or feeling, what they're experiencing, how in the world are we supposed to feel
right.
close to them? Right. So I appreciate you, Dr. Ken. This was an interesting topic that I will actually think about off and on this whole week, I know, because my kids, with a conversation, you know, about what happened today at school or anything else, can bring up this whole idea of what is that person thinking? What is that person feeling? So thank you, Dr. Ken. Thank you for listening today. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at podcast@feedingthemouth.com.
This episode sponsored by We Feed Raw. Have you ever actually looked at the label on your dog's food? Most dog food labels are a long list of things that don't look like food. Powders, starches, additives used to hold ultra-processed kibble together. At We Feed Raw, the label looks very different. High-quality meat, nutrient-rich organs, complete and balanced nutrition formulated by PhD nutrition experts. No fillers, no artificial preservatives, just real ingredients that support your dog's whole body health. That's why many pet parents see real changes after switching to We Feed Raw's fresh meals. If you want to feed your dog one of the healthiest diets possible, We Feed Raw makes it simple. Right now, new customers can get 40% off their starter box plus free shipping. Visit We Feed Raw at wefeedraw.com to get started today.